Welcome to Augmented Humanity. Our guests are modern explorers working at the intersection of technology and the humanities. They help us to understand ourselves and the worlds we create in this digital age. They are thinkers, creators, makers, and academics working in diverse fields like linguistics, game and object design, history, and communications. I'm your host, Craig Goldsmith.
I'm your host, Ellen Dornan.
We're joined by Hillary Cleary, an interactive designer at IDEUM, who works with her team in Corrales to create, develop, and manufacture multi-touch, immersive, and interactive exhibits for museums across the country. Recent projects can be seen at the Smithsonian Air and Space Museum, the World War II Museum, and the National Cowgirl Hall of Fame. We're also joined by Ethan Ortega, Instructional Coordinator for the New Mexico Department of Cultural Affairs Historic Sites Division, who worked with students at New Mexico Highlands University to reimagine the exhibits at the Jemez Historic Site Visitor Center, which opened to the public in May 18th of 2019. In this episode, we're going to be talking about why museums are turning more and more to immersive and interactive exhibits. But first, it'd be nice to hear from each of you, Ethan and Hillary, for people that aren't familiar with what we mean when we talk about immersive exhibits. So what, describe an immersive exhibit for us.
An immersive exhibit can take a wide variety of forms. I don't think there's really one particular definition, which is what is so exciting about them. Oftentimes, the immersive exhibits that we create encompass a larger space. So it's not necessarily just one piece of signage or one table. Usually, when you think of an immersive exhibit, you think of a room or something that is of a greater scale. One of the projects that comes to mind for me that I've worked on most recently is our work that we did with the National Cowgirl Museum in Fort Worth, Texas. We took some of their collections and created a projection mapped wall, essentially, that covered about half of a room and took items from their collection and translated those into artwork on the walls. So there was an exhibit where you were learning about the collection items, but also there was this sort of experiential component where you were seeing those collection items visualized in a new way.
And for you, Ethan, what's an immersive exhibit?
We do a lot of the same kind of digital work with projection mapping. We're also on the cusp of bringing a lot of virtual reality and augmented reality actually into the classrooms to bring historic sites to kids. But also we view our historic sites as immersive exhibits as well, because, you know, you're coming and you're stepping back in time, and we have great archaeology and great structures that are still there. And then we're kind of augmenting that with digital technologies now to enhance them.
Before we get into some of the how this is changing the work that people are doing in these contexts, you both have now said projection mapping. For someone who's never heard that term, what would that look like if I were actually seeing it in person?
So the way that we kind of like view projection mapping is a way to do virtual reality with a larger group of people and without headsets. And so projection mapping uses lots of different projectors, and you stitch them together and you can project on, you know, really complicated surfaces, whether it's historic buildings or walls, and then, you know, use lots of multimedia on that to kind of transport the visitor.
I would just add to that, you know, when we think of a projection, you can think back to your time in high school or whatever, just with your instructor teaching you on a single surface, right? And with projection mapping, I think the key is really creating that more complicated object through multiple projections. So one project that we did at IDEUM was a larger than life piece of Acoma pottery. So we had four projectors running simultaneously, each at different intervals, basically surrounding this pot. And then some of our AV systems workers worked to sort of stitch the pot together in a way that was seamless. So you were having this dynamic 360 projection all around an object.
I saw that project actually down at the IDEUM studio. So what kind of things were you putting on the pot?
We worked with a local artist from the Acoma Pueblo. So she had never worked digitally before. And what was really exciting was taking her designs, and she worked to translate those using some Adobe software, using Adobe Illustrator, into a series of unique designs. And then we had half of the exhibit essentially was a touch screen where visitors could approach this larger than life pot and decorate their own pot. So there was an interpretive quality in the sense that they were gaining gaining an understanding of what these different designs meant through reading about them on the touch screen and being able to change them and interact and sort of intermix them dynamically and then seeing those in real time.
I just think that's such a great example. What would you say the takeaway for the visitor is for an exhibit like that versus sort of the regular exhibit that you might see at Museum of Indian Arts and Culture or whatever, where you go in and there are cases of Akaba pots that you can look at but not touch or interact with?
You know, I think this really maybe points back to what we were talking about in terms of a definition of something that is immersive. I think increasingly we're seeing in museums exhibits and opportunities for visitors to insert themselves into an experience or engage with something in a way that goes beyond just an interpretive reading or viewing of something. I think what's really exciting about immersive exhibits, and then in particular the Akoma pottery piece, is the fact that a visitor has some agency in that process. They are interacting, they are manipulating an object, and I think that that can lead to a more memorable experience and something that someone's going to walk away with, not only having learned about the Akoma Pueblo pottery, but also feeling maybe like they've been able to participate in a new way that they've never experienced before.
Are you seeing that also, Ethan? Because you're in a context that's much, I wouldn't say older, but where people have been trying to interpret historic sites since before any of us were even born.
Yeah, you know? So that theme of the community being involved and having agency, it's not just a theme in museum interpretation, but also in the generation of history. We're moving towards community-based archaeology and community-based research at all of our historic sites. And so by having these kinds of dynamic exhibits, not only does it allow people to be more involved in that process, but it allows it to be super dynamic and update almost instantly as we're doing new research.
You know, this is really cool because one of the things that I know Ellen had brought up was, are we just doing these kinds of exhibits because they're cool and awesome and it's fun to project stuff onto the surface of a pot? And actually, what I'm hearing from both of you is much more important. It's getting people engaged in a much deeper level. You said something about community, give me the phrase again, community-sourced history?
So we started a series of actually now award-winning projects. It's called Community-Based Participatory Research. Basically, we have worked with the local Pueblos, especially the ones that co-manage the sites with us, and we've worked with them to create archaeological projects. So they'll help us come up with the hypotheses, figure out where to dig, and what that project will look like. But it doesn't stop there. They help us interpret it and help us figure out how we're going to display these objects. So by creating a dynamic experience like we've done at Hamas now, it allows us to display that whole process.
And so you're also showing that process in your, what you call your immersive exhibits, in a sense?
Absolutely.
So yeah. What does that look like? I almost want to be able to go see it, but I can't right now.
I was saying earlier, we don't limit like our immersive experiences to just digital.
Right.
Before we installed the new exhibit that opened on May 18th, it was actually an immersive laboratory exhibit. So while the excavation was taking place outside, every artifact that came out, you could follow it from being pulled out of the ground into the museum exhibit, which was the laboratory, see all of the steps that it goes through until it reaches time to go into curation.
But it was the real process. So this wasn't...
It wasn't staged.
Living history. Like,
no. Living, I mean, it is living history, yeah. But not the, like, no, yeah. You know, dressing up, yeah, in costumes, yeah, and reenacting, yeah, something. It, yeah, was, you're actually seeing every step that this artifact goes through and how we generate meaning from it, and how multiple people generate meaning from it. So, you know, using these kinds of dynamic exhibits, it also allows for multiple perspectives to be displayed on all of this.
I know that IDEAM's touch screens in particular are showing up in all sorts of different contexts now. Are you seeing a similar sort of level of engagement, or is there a community participation level?
Totally, yeah. I mean, I think it depends on the exhibit that we do, but all across the board since joining IDEAM and working on the myriad of different projects, it's really apparent how the exhibits are almost changing and becoming more geared towards community engagement. We're working working on a project for the Albuquerque Biopark right now. So they're about to get penguins in for the first time. And IDM has done all of the exhibit design for the penguin exhibit there. And the way that we framed it is almost giving the visitor sort of the tools to feel like they are an explorer on an icebreaker ship in the Arctic and Atlantic areas. So a lot of the design of those exhibits sort of fed into a sense of immersion in that space. So when you walk in, there's a sense that you're actually on a ship and you're interacting with a research vessel, essentially. And the way we designed it, we interviewed a series of different scientists who are really knowledgeable about the types of penguins that they're going to have there. And you're interacting with those scientists. So once again, it's sort of reaching a bit further and trying to get people to be engaged with media in ways that feels participatory.
What do you mean that you get to interact with the scientists?
We have one exhibit that's a research table is what it's called. So it's one of our touch tables. And there's different modules, essentially. So one of the modules is a video call system with, I think we have maybe 8 or 10 different scientists that we work to set up interviews with. And then the visitor has choices in what they can ask them. So the media is all pre-recorded, obviously, but there's a sense, I guess, that you're having a conversation with this person, with this expert. So you can make choices about what you want to ask them and where the conversation goes.
It also sounds like things are changing then for different venues, whether it's museums or historic sites where they're trying to bring in more what you would call immersive exhibits. Is this going to be more and more common? Like, I know that the Museum of Natural History is working on a big upgrade to their volcano exhibit. I mean, I don't know exactly what they're doing, but it seems like there's a lot of traction for this sort of work.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, as museums, it used to, you know, be kind of viewed as, well, you know, other museums and like libraries and these things are who we compete with. But no, it's not. It's anything that's entertainment is what we compete with. And, you know, there's been kind of a game changer in the last, you know, several years, and that's Meow Wolf. And so oftentimes we, you know, we compare what we're doing and say, how would this compare to Meow Wolf? And how would this capture people's imaginations and, you know, be able to captivate them like that?
Are the changes in this technology sort of fundamentally changing the way that museums and visitor centers see the people who are coming? I mean, changing from maybe even the purpose of a museum from something that's collections oriented to something that's more human oriented?
I definitely think so. I think museums are becoming spaces that are much more community oriented and also spaces in education as well. I mean, my background, I went to school at UCLA and I worked at the library there for multiple years. And when I was working there, they were undergoing a massive transition trying to incorporate these digital tools. But that also meant that the events that they were having were changing. So we started having an International Games Day. There was a video game orchestra that would come and perform in the library, which traditionally is a very academic, quiet space. So I think in the same vein, museums maybe are having to adapt a little bit. And I think I 100% agree with that it's not just museums competing with museums. It's the fundamental nature in which we are entertained is changing, and spaces like Meow Wolf are pushing that. Music festivals like Coachella and these other spaces that kind of create this immersive other environment for people to get lost in are so attractive that museums really need to harness that in order to bring people into their doors.
Your work's more in the museum, the traditional museum context, even if that context is changing a lot.
Yes.
Of the IDM work. But you, Ethan, it's a little different because really the historic sites are what we think of as just these places that are sort of half outside and might be some old buildings. But do you think there's also that pressure to compete with traditional entertainment or modern entertainment that's creating these kind of...
Absolutely. That's exactly the reason why one of our new restrooms at the Hamas exhibit is an immersive volcano experience.
For real?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. You go in and there's glowing lava and volcano sounds and information about, you know, the volcanoes of the area.
Figuratively and literally, for sure. Well, this has just been fascinating. For those of you that are interested in what we've been discussing, for more information about the Jemez Historic Site, you can visit nmhistoricsites.org/Jemez. For more information about IDEUM and their immersive and tactile exhibits, you can visit IDEUM.com. Augmented Humanity is a program of the New Mexico Humanities Council, produced in partnership with KUNM-FM. You can visit us online and find out more about our programs at nmhumanities.org. Our theme music comes courtesy James Whiten, string bassist and loopmeister extraordinaire.